Gar and I, as you know, as we sit here together and talk about this, we understand accountability, and we are accountable for what this team did this year. We don't run away from it. We accept it. That's on us.
Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA, your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories.
For me to be here in the NBA organization, such a historic organization, the Chicago Bulls, so it's just a dream come true for me.
Live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday.
This is going to be a process. You'll snap your fingers and it all happens at once, but that's the plan moving forward.
So kick back, relax, and get ready for the best hour of your day. Locked On Bulls starts now. Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm Jordan Malley along with Matt Peck. We are live on Dash Radio, dashradio.com. On the Nothing But Net channel, we are live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls underscore Peck. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/LockedOnShyBulls. You know where to subscribe to the show, iTunes, Android, Stitcher, Google Play, anywhere you find podcasts, you will find us. So we're wrapping up 2017. This is our final show of the year, and I was pretty excited for this show, honestly, because it gives us a chance to look back not only at the second half of last season, but everything that has happened over the past year in 2017 for the Chicago Bulls. It's been a roller coaster ride for not only people covering the team, but for Chicago Bulls fans in general. It's been a roller coaster. There's been complete flips of what this team has looked like, even over the course of the last couple of months. But needless to say, I'm excited to get in some of the best and worst of the Chicago Bulls from 2017.
Yeah, it's crazy to just think back on where the Bulls were, about a year ago, a team with a rising star, borderline superstar, two declining stars, old stars we didn't expect to bring into the fold after the 2015-16 season. You know, the Wade, Rondo, Butler, three alphas story. And now here we are at the end of 2017 with a completely overhauled roster, some new, young, interesting prospects, a tank that hasn't really been going according to plan recently with an unexpected win streak. We had a fight in practice between two teammates, which involved a trip to the hospital and a feud where teammates weren't speaking. Now they are looking like two of the most efficient players on the court right now, one having served his suspension, one having healed his broken facial bones. I mean, 2017 as a Bulls fan had absolutely everything other than, you know, championship contention, but hey, whatever.
Yeah, if you're looking for entertainment through this year at least, the Chicago Bulls certainly gave you that. I mean, it seemed like every single day outside of what else was happening in the NBA, there was always a news story, there was always something going on with this Bulls team. But with that, let's dive right into it. So we're going to go through the best and worst moments of what we thought contended for the Chicago Bulls best and worst of 2017. We also want to dive into some of the takes that Matt and I had, some of the best takes that have formulated over 2017.
You suck!
Yeah, probably the worst takes we've had over this year that we can kind of admit. But let's start with the Chicago Bulls here and the team in general, the storylines in general with them. So I want to kick it off with one of my favorite moments, one of the best moments I think in the Chicago Bulls of 2017 had. And it goes right to the Bulls pulling off two wins in the playoffs. I think that first round, heading into the first round, everybody said, you know, this Bulls team doesn't have any chance of winning games. I'd be surprised if they don't get swept. You turn around, you got Rajon Rondo playing two of his best games he had in a Chicago Bulls uniform. And we were looking at it after two games, and it's like, the Chicago Bulls are up 2-0 in this series. I felt like this was one of the coolest moments, especially for Bulls fans and the struggles that happened through the 2016-2017. This has got to be one of my favorite moments, is that even though the Bulls didn't win this series, Rajon Rondo coming back after everything had happened on and off the court, in the locker room, the chemistry with the team, him coming back and being really that catalyst to bring the Bulls to those two wins in the playoffs.
I thought that was one of the dumbest moments of the Bulls 2017 year.
Really?
Yes.
Why?
I hated that. I hated that the Bulls won those first two games in Boston and surprised everybody and got the fan base a little bit excited, because you know what it did? It gave the Bulls front office a chance to take credit that they didn't deserve, because really, you know, even with the Dwayne Wade buyout that happened before this season started, Paxson, to a lesser degree, kind of admitted that the three alphas plan didn't necessarily work out the way that they wanted it to, and they were deciding to go in this new direction. But after Rondo went down, when he was key to their first two wins on the road that nobody saw coming, I mean, the Bulls went on to lose four straight, which I did call, you know, when we get to our best takes of the year later in today's show. It was like, oh, well, so the Bulls lost Rondo, and Paxson said, you know, it's unfortunate that we lost Rondo because, you know, we really felt that we could have won this series, and they got to take credit for the fact that maybe the three alphas idea could have worked. Because it was like, hey, Butler, Wade, Rondo, here we are in, you know, a playoff series that nobody thought we would be competitive in against the number one seed in the East, the, you know, the up-and-coming Boston Celtics. Look how well we did, see? We retooled our roster while still, you know, trying to develop some young talent. We stayed relevant while retooling, and here we are up 2-0, and aw, shucks, if it weren't for a broken Rondo thumb, we might have shocked the world and upset Boston, which, I'm sorry, bullshit. Even if Rondo didn't go down, the Bulls still lose that series. I'm 100% certain that that happens. So, no, I hated that. It was stupid. The Bulls' three alphas experiment was a waste of time and money. It did not work, and the two playoff wins that we got unexpectedly should not have validated any of the boneheaded decisions that the Bulls' front office made as of last season.
You bring up some good points, and yeah, I guess I forgot about the fact that it probably helped validate John Paxson and Gar Foreman a little bit in terms of, oh, hey, look at what we did, and look, we won two playoff games, and if Rondo wasn't out, this is what could have happened. I can agree with that from that standpoint. I think from my personal feeling, why I think it was one of the best moments, not only just going into the playoffs, giving two wins for Bulls fans, just the sheer fact that they weren't embarrassed and swept four straight like we had talked about, and all the things that had happened before that. I also liked for the fact that Rajon Rondo came out and punked Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler. Rajon Rondo was the most important Bull in that series on that team, and everything that happened, that Butler and Wade took sides in February and kind of called out the young guys, and Rondo didn't like it. I thought Rondo coming back in this playoff, going up against Boston, his former team, going into Boston and doing the things that he did, I thought it was a cool moment for the Bulls as far as 2017 goes. And the fact that he punked Butler and Wade, and I don't know what their relationship is now, but I thought that was kind of cool for Rajon Rondo to do, especially the perception that he got here when he came into Chicago and kind of what people thought of him before he became into a Bulls uniform. And I've said this before, after the season was over and Rondo didn't re-sign with the Bulls, I have a lot more respect for Rajon Rondo in the game and the person that he is, just from the one short year that he did play in Chicago. So that's why I pegged it as one of my best moments of the year.
I mean, yeah, if you want to give Rondo that credit and the praise for being the guy that led the Bulls to two unexpected playoff wins on the road, that's fine. And I would agree. I mean, I didn't love the Rondo signing when it happened because it didn't make sense to me for Hoiberg's offense and for getting younger and more athletic. And they also, in my opinion, outbid nobody. Like, they didn't need to give Rondo that much money because it didn't seem like there was a lot of competition for his services last summer. That being the case, of the three veterans, him, Wade, and Butler, absolutely, I think Rondo did the best and the most for the young guys on this Bulls roster, the ones who are still here looking to be a part of this rebuilding future. By all accounts of his young teammates, the best teammate they've ever had, the best teammate they've ever played with and for. And, you know, it just goes to show that, you know, perceptions aren't always accurate. And Rondo gets a lot of bad rap for being a bad teammate in his various stops after he left Boston. And, you know, he still has some of those turn back the clock performances. Like, I think it was just the other night he dropped 25 assists.
Yeah.
In a game for New Orleans, which is nuts. You know, it was 1 year here in Chicago for Rondo, and it was a weird year. It was a strange year, but I respect what he did sticking up for the young guys when Butler and Wade kind of took the lazy veterans way out and called out their young guys for not doing as much when, you know, I mean, it's easy to point the finger. And Rondo said, eloquently, I should add, that hey, it's on us. We're the ones who are supposed to be leading and leading by example. So in that sense, yeah, it was a nice validation for Rondo to be that very important player for the Bulls as they were unexpectedly winning a couple of playoff games.
All right, so give me your best. Give me one or two of your best moments from the Bulls this season.
I hated the playoff victories because they were dumb, and you know, as I said, it validated some dumb front office moves. But the thing that you just can't deny is a lot of fun is the TNT streak. You know, the TNT Bulls, which aren't technically dead yet, just because the Bulls have no nationally televised games on TNT this season. So they're not dead. They're just hibernating. But March 2nd against the Golden State Warriors, who were 50-10 coming into that game. Granted, they didn't have Kevin Durant. He had just gone down with an ankle injury or a leg injury or something. But it was just like the random TNT mojo that the Bulls have had for years, because no Durant, Steph Curry, and Klay Thompson combined to go 3 of 22 from downtown. The Bulls use Felicio off the bench for 26 minutes, Zipser off the bench for 23 minutes, and get this, Campaign even played 13 minutes in this game, and the Bulls somehow beat the Warriors 94-87. It made absolutely no sense as a basketball game other than the fact that it was the Bulls on TNT.
The fact that Cameron Payne played more than 5 minutes in that game has to tell you something.
I mean, you got big minutes from Felicio, Zipser, and Payne. And I don't mean big minutes in the sense that like any of them had a great influence on the game, just the sheer volume of minutes. Those three guys, none of whom are really even in the picture for the Bulls right now. They all got big minutes off the bench, and they beat the Warriors. And then how about this? Later that month, March 30th, another TNT game. It was, you know, beating the reigning Western Conference champions and then the reigning Eastern Conference champions. March 30th against the Cavs, the Bulls are down 9 at halftime. They win the third quarter 37-21. They get 28-10 from Nico and 15 assists from Rondo coming in off the bench, and they beat the Cavs. I mean, how, like, what? Why? Why? Oh, because TNT Bulls.
It seems like it's a common theme now with this team in 2017 is like everything you thought this team was going to be or should be, or, you know, it says on paper, you see it on the court, but then all of a sudden the Bulls like to do the complete and utter opposite of that. And that's what I feel like this TNT streak was for the Bulls back then. This is an odd situation. You go into the summer and then you go into this season, you look at everything that they've done. It's like, okay, everything that we want them to do, they're not doing, and everything that they're doing, we don't want them to do. So it's been sort of a common theme, even with the transition and the redirection of this Bulls team. It seems like it's a common theme that the Bulls are doing things that are incomprehensible, and it kind of just makes you scratch your head and go, what the hell are we doing?
You never know. But it was always enjoyable. Even last season, when last season was just so up and down, and I felt like so blah about everything that was happening, and I wasn't really on board with the three alphas plan. I was so mad at the front office for so many decisions. But it was just so hard to not get sucked into that infectious fun of like, oh, the Bulls are playing on TNT tonight? Well, you know I'm tuning in, and you know they're going to win. Like, there's just something so simplistically happy and fun to just tune into a TNT Bulls game on, you know, usually against a primetime opponent because it's a primetime game, and be like, for whatever reason, somehow, some way, the Bulls are going to end up winning this game.
So to head back into another best of the moment for me, I have to point to the summer. And so draft night, I said one of the best Bulls moments this season was the front office finally picking a direction after all the BS that they spewed to Bulls fans throughout the second half of the 2016-2017 season, even after the playoffs were over, when they had their press conference, still talking about wanting to keep Jimmy here, all the BS that they spewed that they weren't going to build around Jimmy. They were going to build with Jimmy, whatever the hell that means. I think one of the best and most important nights for the Chicago Bulls in 2017 was making finally that decision to trade Jimmy Butler and go out and get Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and Chris Dunn. Now, that sort of is shaped differently from what people's reaction was on draft night when they went out and traded Jimmy Butler for these three pieces. That sort of dynamic has changed now in 2017, now that we're wrapping it up. But I felt like this was an important moment, not just for the players that you got back in return in that trade, but the sheer fact that the front office finally picked a direction. That's what I feel like we've been calling for the last two seasons when Fred Hoiberg joined this team. And you clearly saw that this Bulls team was sitting in basketball purgatory the whole entire time. And it's like fans didn't really care about making the playoffs at that point, at least fans that knew that this team wasn't going anywhere with the pieces that the Bulls have added and the direction that they were going in 2016, 2017, they knew it wasn't going to work. So for me, I think it was a good moment in terms of the front office finally picking a direction and telling the fan base, this is what we're doing, this is our plan, and not spewing some BS to us about how they're going to restructure the roster and do all these other things. To me, it was an important moment for the Chicago Bulls, and the way it turns out now, well, we'll have to wait and see, but I thought trading Jimmy Butler on draft night was one of the better moments and one of the more important moments in 2017.
Absolutely. And just to tack on to that, one of my favorite details of the Jimmy Butler trade on draft night, and it's kind of, you know, more of a Schadenfreude, a type of enjoyment, laughing at the embarrassment of the Bulls front office, is the tweet from Jimmy Butler's trainer, Travell Gaines. Do you remember that?
Where I forgot
after
about
the
that.
Bulls trade Butler, Jimmy Butler's trainer, Travell Gaines, who has never really been like he never worked for the Bulls. He was just Jimmy's private, you know, personal trainer, who has often been, you know, a guy to express his opinion loudly without really worrying about any possible repercussions or, you know, calling people out. Never been afraid to voice his opinion. He sent this tweet after the Bulls traded Butler. 0-82, referring to likely the Bulls' record the following season. Worst culture in the league. I met drug dealers with better morals than their GM. He is a liar and everyone knows it. I mean, come on, how do you not love that? The trainer of your best player, your star player, who you just shipped away, just absolutely ravages the Bulls' front office, and specifically Gar Forman, for trading away his client. I mean, come on. Like, how can you not love that? It was hilarious.
But I totally forgot about that tweet. That is hilarious. And certainly one of those moments that you remember as a storyline for a few days, and then now it pops back up in 2017. But yeah, that was absolutely insane. So you got another best moment of the year?
So this is another one from actually very early, the earliest stages of 2017. So dating back to last season. Just looking through some old Bulls box scores. January 2nd against the Charlotte Hornets. Perhaps one of the greatest Jimmy Butler takeover dominant performances. One of the performances that really kind of put Butler in the conversation of maybe, you know, not MVP, but like, oh, this guy is a superstar who can take over a game. Not just a guy who's improved his offensive versatility. He drops 52 points against Charlotte. In a 118-111 Bulls win. The Bulls actually come from behind in the fourth quarter in this one. Butler checks in sometime around the six-minute mark of the fourth quarter. He drops 17 of the Bulls' final 21 points. And those 17 points came when the clock read 4 minutes or less.
Jimmy's playing this like it's the last shot of the game. Holds the ball out against Batum. Circles to his right, dances back, fires.
Sriracha, he's hot.
Oh, my goodness.
47, Neil Funk. He's channeling his inner Michael Jordan. Oh, my goodness.
So in the final 4 minutes of the fourth quarter, he dropped 17 of his 52. And I just remember watching that game from start to finish thinking, like, my God, Jimmy Butler is doing absolutely anything he wants to against this Hornets defense. And, you know, we saw another one of those in their overtime win, the Wolves overtime win against Denver earlier this week, when I think Butler dropped like 39 or 40 and had like 11 of Minnesota's 12 points in overtime. And he just took over. And he had a great, you know, like, they can't guard with me, they can't F-bomb with me thing after he made a big clutch shot with less than a minute left. And that game against Charlotte, you know, in the middle of last season was just an eye opener to me, to be like, what? Like, Jimmy Butler, I knew Jimmy Butler was special, but Jimmy Butler is top tier, can straight up dominate a game special.
Yeah, and I think the second half of seasons is really where Jimmy Butler gets his claim to fame. And you're kind of seeing that now with him, with the Timberwolves. We kind of talked about it early on in the season. It's like his struggles to kind of figure out what he is with that Timberwolves team and how they fit with those three other guys, with Karl Anthony Towns, Andrew Wiggins, and now him, too, to include there. But like you said, over the last two or three weeks, Jimmy Butler's been going off and being a crucial part of that Timberwolves team. So I think you're right, too. It kind of clarified for at least Bulls fans early on last season or early on this year in 2017 that Jimmy Butler was probably more than just an above-average player, that he finally got to push through and break through that conversation of being a top 15, top 20, even some people even talking about a top 10 player in the league as far as last year. Now, whether or not those conversations are re-sparked this year, we'll see, but certainly a crazy moment, and some of those moments are kind of nice to reflect on, especially people who were avid Jimmy Butler fans and did not want the Bulls to trade him in the offseason. So it's always great to go back and reminisce on some of those games.
I mean, he was sensational that night, and we've seen plenty of those kind of performances from Butler since, but that was definitely one of the first ones to me that stuck out. It's like, you know, doing an MJ kind of thing, right, where you're just like, screw it, like, if I need to score 40 or 45 or 50 for us to win tonight, then that's what's happening.
I love it. I love the mentality. All right, so now we got to get into probably more Bulls fans, what you're intrigued to hear about, and that's the worst moments of the year for the Chicago Bulls. So I've got a handful of them, but I want to pick a couple because I feel like you and I probably have a few that are somewhere similar. But I think to start this off, I have to go with the game from hell. And that one was where the Bulls fell a 19-point lead in the second half in the fourth quarter, fall to the Atlanta Hawks in February. This is the game that Butler and Wade made their presence known, made it that it was Butler about Butler and Wade and everybody else. And this is what started the firestorm of separation in the locker room. And then obviously the classic Rondo Instagram tweet with him, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett. So I think this was one of the worst moments in terms of Chicago Bulls, in terms of what was going on in the locker room, what was happening with the Bulls at that time. I felt like this was one of the worst moments of the year. It separated a lot of those guys in that locker room. It made them pick sides. Rondo and the younger guys picking one side, Butler and Wade making it about themselves and making about it other. And I think this sort of made this team kind of realize and make the front office at least realize that, yeah, this is probably not working. And this is worst case scenario, if at all, like the last way you wanted this to work out. And coming in February, where the Bulls were still competing for a playoff spot and trying to be in the playoff hunt, this came at the worst time ever. And I thought it was just a terrible look for the Chicago Bulls.
It was bad. I mean, everything about it was bad. And I kind of remember hearing those post-game words from Butler and Wade come out and thinking, like, oh, like, really, guys? You're really going to, like, that's what's happening right now? This is what you're going to do? I mean, for a team that had all sorts of chemistry issues, you think this is going to solve it? Calling out the young guys, and particularly being upset with Dwayne Wade, calling out his younger teammates for not caring enough, to put forth a winning effort every night. Like, dude, Dwayne Wade, there are an embarrassingly huge number of clips of you this season already just caught dogging it on defense. And I know you're a veteran and, you know, you're probably more focused on, you know, contributing offensively, and you're taking some possessions off on the defensive end and you're saving yourself for a playoff run. That's what he kept saying, right? But it's like, dude, you can't call out people for not trying and not caring if you are literally playing traffic cone levels of defense. That to me was just like so embarrassing for Wade, and embarrassing to be like, this is the leadership that the front office talked about, as like, you know, signing Wade is not just getting a high caliber player that we've always, you know, always wanted. You know, they wanted Wade since he was in the draft in 2003, and they tried to get him in 2010. When they finally got him, and it was, you know, at this stage in Wade's career, obviously they said not just about what he brings on the court, but what he brings in the locker room as a leader. Really? That's what he brought. He called out the kids for not trying hard enough, and he's out there dogging it on defense every night. Like, give me a break.
The weird thing about it too with Dwayne Wade was the fact that not only was he calling out guys for things that he wasn't doing on the floor, but he isolated a locker room in which the number one thing in a leader that you want is not to do that. You don't want things to fraction and you don't want things to break apart. And that's what I felt like Dwayne Wade, especially later on in the season, did. And he sort of took Jimmy Butler under his wings, and I think he somehow casted a spell on Jimmy Butler to make him this different type of person than I think we saw beforehand, before Wade had shown up. And had Wade not been here that season, I think things might have been a little bit different. We would have saw a little bit of different side of Jimmy Butler. To recap this, I think what I was talking about with Rajon Rondo too, in his Instagram post too, was fitting. And I think going back and looking at that, and then you look at his entire career with the Bulls, which was one lofty season, and you can even go back to the time where the Bulls benched him for a few games, benched him on that night where he had his bobblehead night, and he was benched for conduct detrimental to the team. So I think the rap that Rondo got, I gained a lot of respect from him during this worst moment, because he took the sides of the young guys. He was trying to create some type of unity for a guy that was pegged around the NBA for being not that type of guy at all, a guy that blows up a locker room. I think Dwayne Wade was secretly that guy who was doing that in that locker room. And all the money that the Bulls spent on Wade and what the Bulls got in return for him, I think, was just kind of embarrassing. It was a low point for the front office. And any way you try to spin that, that signing was just one of the worst deals the Bulls have made in a really long time.
Yeah, it really was. Bad. And speaking of bad deals, let's fast forward a month from that epic collapse game against Atlanta in late January to late February, when the Bulls trade Taj Gibson, Doug McDermott, and a second round draft pick to Oklahoma City for Cam Payne, Joffrey LeVern, and Anthony Morrow. This Bulls trade might live in infamy. I mean, my God, it looks worse and worse the more time that passes. Hey, who's excited to get Cam Payne back soon? Bueller. I mean, maybe if he actually gets minutes, it'll help towards getting the tank back on track. That's kind of a common trend and a common sentiment on Bulls Twitter right now. So obviously the Bulls, like, the execution and the negotiation of this trade was absolute dog shit, pardon my French. You got nothing in that trade. Obviously, you try trading Taj because you know he's going to walk in free agency that following, you know, the upcoming summer anyway, because the Bulls couldn't afford to keep him. And Doug McDermott, talk about, a draft night maneuver gone horribly wrong. They give up on him after giving up lots to get him. And they got nothing in return. Obviously, LeVern and Morrow were just half a season loaners for balancing out contracts. And Cam Payne, the young prospect that the Bulls were so excited to get in that was like the main point of that trade, is so incapable of playing in the NBA that even his teammates have gone on record saying as much. To me, the saddest thing about this, and why it classifies as one of my worst Bulls moments of 2017, is the departure of Taj Gibson, who, in my opinion, is one of the most underappreciated Bulls in the franchise's long storied history. You know, Stacey King always said hard hat and lunch pail about Taj, and that is absolutely right. He always did the dirty work. He did, you know, the hard work, diving for loose balls, hustling for offensive rebounds, playing just absolutely rugged defense. And he really did a commendable job, an underrated job, advancing his offensive skill set over the course of his career. And him leaving, you know, he was very emotional about it. He did a great interview on one of the Chicago radio shows that day, and you could tell he was very emotional and sad to be leaving. A long chapter ended. And it was the end of a big chapter, because Taj leaving in the middle of last season signified a complete 100% departure from any and all players that made it to that Eastern Conference Finals series against Miami in 2011. The D. Rose, Joakim, Luol Deng, Taj Gibson, Kyle Korver Bulls that we thought had a championship window, Taj leaving town was the last player on that conference finals roster. So just a very sad day to be a Bulls fan.
Yeah, that's true. And with the Taj Gibson, with Taj Gibson being involved in that trade, and everything else that surrounded that trade too. And I feel like, in terms of thinking about the worst moves the Bulls made in 2017, I know everybody wants to peg the cash considerations, Jordan Bell trade at the start of the draft, and trading away that pick on the same day that you decided to rebuild. I think this trade goes far and above anything that they did with the Jordan Bell pick and trading away the second round pick. Like you talked about it. The amount of things that they gave up to try and get Doug McDermott when they drafted him, they gave up two first round picks that turned out to be Yusuf Nurkic and Gary Harris. Like people want to talk about how good Jordan Bell's doing. How about we go and look at what Gary Harris is doing right now for the Denver Nuggets, or what Yusuf Nurkic was doing last season and developing into this season. Like you want to talk about guys that you lost out on. You talk about those guys, and the fact that they pulled the trigger so early on Doug McDermott, I feel like they were so quick to just say, all right, you know what, we're done with this. Let's clean our hands of it and be done. But the fact that they doubled down on saying that Cameron Payne could be an elite asset for this team as far as being able to develop a young guard, like that is so pathetic that they even spewed that to Bulls fans. It's gross. And the fact that your players and your trainers and your coaching staff came out and said, yeah, we knew by the second practice that this kid couldn't play in the NBA. And we only said that the second practice because the first practice, we thought that he was a little bit nervous. So the fact that your whole staff considers Cam Payne pretty much a waste of time only certifies this trade as probably being one of the worst ever made by the Bulls. And let's be honest here, when he comes back, he has no place on this roster. And the fact that they re-signed him and picked up his extension for next year, like, wait, what are you doing? So I agree completely, wholeheartedly. That was probably one of the top worst moments of the Bulls in 2017.
I feel like we at least have to mention the one that you briefly mentioned. The cash considerations trade.
Look,
I think, you know, Jordan Bell is not the issue. And, you know, Bulls fans who are upset about like, oh, man, wouldn't it be nice if we had Jordan Bell? Look how well he's played for Golden State. No, the Bulls didn't trade Jordan Bell right after drafting him. They traded their draft rights at that pick to Golden State and selected Bell for them. We've been over that. That's not the thing that should get you upset. It's the fact that the Bulls had nobody on their board at that time.
Why did you guys sell that second round pick to Golden State? Obviously, it was a lot of money.
We had some wings on our board that we had targeted that were the only way we were going to keep that pick. They went before us. So we in drafting Lowry and the fact that we have Nico's a restricted free agent who we intend to bring back. Bobby Portis, we didn't want to add another big, and that was all that was left on our board. So, and it keeps us now with, we were at 12 roster spots, right. Gives us real flexibility with the roster. So we didn't want to just use up a roster spot on a player that we probably wouldn't have kept.
Like, did you just forget that you had a second round pick because you're so used to giving them away like candy on Halloween? How was your scouting team not prepared with multiple options when that second round pick came around? And it was so important to you to give yourself a little bit more cash flexibility, some, you know, whatever the phrase was that Paxson used, something disgusting that fans don't want to hear, but, you know, about adding some, you know, like a cash influx for, hey, we just made, an easy $3.5 million. And for a draft rights trade, that's the maximum in the NBA. It's the most the Bulls could have received for the rights to that second round draft pick. So kudos to them for getting the max finally on something when they're executing deals that involve other teams. Good for friggin' you. But how, when starting a rebuild, can you not be prepared to have multiple guys scouted and multiple options for your second round draft pick? Inexcusable.
It really is. And that's the thing about Jordan Bell. It's like people still keep bringing his name up. It's like, all right, I get it. They traded him away. But the fact that if the Bulls would have kept that pick doesn't say that they were going to draft Jordan Bell in the first place. They didn't even have him on his draft board, like you had said. So the fact that you get so angry about that, I think the most frustrating part of it all, like you said, is trading away a second round pick on the night you decide to rebuild when you do need bodies, guys that you can evaluate coming into the season. All right, I've got one more in worst of moments, and there's a bunch of ones that you can tweet at us if you think of other things. Tweet at us at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Mailer, at Bulls _Peck. We want to see what you guys think about your best and worst moments of the 2017 season. So make sure to tweet at us or email us some of your best and worst moments. But obviously, this one's got to be the most obvious, right? The Bobby and Nico fight. This has to be one of the worst moments in terms of what happened then. Not really the result that's happening now, but really what the circus and the clown circus that it was when these two got into a fight and everything that surrounded this story for the first really 2 months of the Bulls season. This was the maximum story of it, is that every day we were talking about Bobby and Nico and their fight and what was transpiring with it. And even to now, like, there's still lingering talks about how this is affecting the Bulls right now, even though that Bobby and Nico are playing so well. But I feel like if you're adding to a list of worst moments of the year, this is by far one of the most embarrassing moments, to have two teammates that have been around the Bulls for a while to all of a sudden get into a fight and have such animosity. And the fact that you brought up in your press conference during the summer when you decided to rebuild, and even before training camp had started, they said how Fred they loved the way Fred had conducted a culture and started to establish a great culture with this Bulls team. And then what, 3 weeks later, like 2 or 3 days before the start of the season, Bobby knocks out Nico and Nico's out till the beginning of December.
Yeah, it's ugly. For a team that kept preaching things about positive culture, building a positive culture, a strong winning environment for the young guys. I mean, come on. What a two-faced joke is that? When you got guys literally punching each other in the face on your practice court. And, you know, to me, it signified the ineptitudes of the front office. It signified the weakness of the head coach, who couldn't control that situation and get his players to fall in line and kiss and make up. It signified the weakness of the front office again when they came to the media and tried to spin this in a positive way, but really all they did was play a stalling game, saying, yeah, hopefully this all just blows over. And they're lucky as hell that it did. We haven't really brought that up. You know, we said in our last show, it seems like this Bobby Nico feud is winding down and they're interacting more on the court. They're playing well on the court. Maybe still not best of friends off it, but like, the Bulls front office completely lucked out with this situation, and they did essentially nothing to handle it. I guess, you know, Nico gave him credit for being very, you know, helpful and welcoming and, you know, cooperative as far as giving him what he needed, the time and the space he needed, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, come on. It's a joke. And, you know, who knows? They still might look to trade Nico before the deadline. It'll be interesting to see whether or not he waives his trade clause. But to start your rebuild with two of our young, promising players that we're very high on, that we value greatly, get in a fight in training camp. That's how you start your rebuild. Really great look. I mean, the Bulls were the laughingstock of the league for like a week after that happened.
So with that, I want to shift gears to our best and worst take of the year. So, Matt, I'm going to let you start this off. Give me what ended up turning out from when we were the Debatables, even now to when we're on Locked On Bulls. What ended up being one of your best takes of the year? And give me what ended up being probably your worst take of the year.
All right. So I'll give you my best take and then a quick runner up. My best take, and I think this was actually right before I came on board as your co-host back at the Debatables. This was during their playoff series with Boston. So, you know, we discussed the Bulls unexpectedly go up 2-0 on the road. And after they took a 2-0 lead, I said, they're still losing this series. And I wouldn't be surprised if they dropped the next four straight. And then they dropped two at home, and the series is even at 2-2. After they dropped game four, and the series is tied 2-2. I wrote a column. This is back when I was writing for SM. April 24th. I can tweet out the link. The article is still up. This is how I open the column. Can we just skip to the part when the Bulls get blown out at home in game six to be eliminated from the playoffs? We all know it's coming. Hey, guess what happened? The Bulls got blown out at home in game six to be eliminated from the playoffs. My column, it's a really long one, one of those long-winded rants that I did where I basically went through all of the boneheaded decisions made by the Bulls front office in the 2016-17 season. But that's how I started it, saying we all know it's coming. The Bulls are going to get, they're going to lose game five, and they're going to get embarrassed on their home floor in game six to end the season. And what happens? They're down 13 to the Celtics at halftime in game six. They're down 30 after three quarters. It's a laugher, and it's over. I called it. Knew it was happening. And I called it even after they won the first two games. I said they're going to lose this series, and they're probably going to lose four straight. So That was my best Bulls take of 2017. And then honorable mention, I did a live Facebook live episode of my other podcast, the 312, covering all of Chicago's major teams on NBA draft night. And when the Butler trade went down and I found out that the Bulls traded up to the 7th overall pick, moments before it happened, I predicted that they were going to take Markkanen with that 7th pick. So I got that pick right when the Bulls traded up. So those are my two best Bulls takes of the season. What about you?
So I have to go with what we talked about early in training camp, and I got laughed at on Twitter. I got laughed at on the show, and you said there's no possible way that this could happen. A lot of other people were in the same camp that said that there's no way, you're an idiot, this is never going to happen. Have you looked at the roster that the Bulls assembled? So my best take of the year, and this is still going to play out, but right now it's looking pretty decent. And I said, with the roster currently constructed and every single person healthy on this roster, I said the Bulls will not be nearly as bad as everyone projects them to be. I said 22.5 wins was their mark at the beginning of the season. That was around what people projected the Bulls to win. Some other places had them as high as 27 to 28 wins in this season. I said, don't be surprised, and I would honestly be shocked if the Bulls were one of the bottom three teams in the NBA as a whole. And I still believe that to be true. And right now we're looking at it. The Bulls, I know, 20 games through the season, they had a 10-game losing streak. They looked like the worst team, the worst assembled roster in the NBA. But now since you got Nico back, Bobby's playing well, you got Chris Dunn taking another step, you have Lauri Markkanen playing decent, and then now you're going to add Zach LaVine in what we were talking about, a matter of 2 weeks, possibly 3 weeks. And if the Bulls don't trade anybody away, Nico, Robin, I see them eclipsing that 22.5 win mark, and it could threaten where the Bulls want to be as far as ping pong balls go in the top five. So I have to say, as far as that best take, and while it's still ongoing, looks pretty decent for right now. And I said that the roster that was constructed right now is called an idiot for it, but we're looking at it right now. The Bulls win 7-8 games in a row, and right now they're playing competitive basketball and staying in a lot of these games. So we'll see what happens with the trade pieces, but in terms of best take of the year, I had to go with this one.
Yeah, I'm pretty mad at you for being right about that. I wish you were wrong.
I'm mad at myself for it because I want the Bulls to be that top. I said it, like, they have to get that top three or top five pick, otherwise the season's a failure. But the way that they constructed this roster and the way that they said they wanted to get a kickstart on their rebuild and get ahead of the game, said they weren't going to be nearly as bad as people thought, and that's kind of playing out. And we'll see the way the Bulls play when Zach LaVine returns and see if it gets any better. But let's get to the worst take of the year. I want to hear what your worst take, what you should get slammed for. What was the worst take of the year that you had?
All right. Well, and this take actually, I mean, I said this when I was on WGN Sports Feed soon after the conclusion of the Bulls 2016-17 season. I said I thought the Bulls were going to run it back. I thought that they were going to bring back Rondo because of the way he played well when he got back into the rotation and earned his role back at towards the tail end of the regular season, and then was key in their two playoff wins, and that Dwayne Wade obviously would opt in if the Bulls decided to run it back and keep Butler instead of trading him and bring Rondo back, because obviously Wade would say, yeah, maybe we'll go to the playoffs again and I'll make another cool $25 million. I said, you know, Paxson and Reinsdorf, they're terrified of the rebuild. They're going to run this back, and the Bulls are going to finish as a 7th or 8th seed again. And I was wrong. And I mean, to the front office's credit, good for them. Because I'm glad that they finally picked a lane that wasn't, let's be middle of the pack, NBA purgatory, where you don't want to be. But I didn't think they had the balls to do it. I didn't think they had the balls to trade Butler and set that whole process in motion. And so I went on TV talking about the Bulls and said, they're going to run it back. And they didn't. So that was probably my worst take of 2017.
Hey, you know what? That's all right, because I'm glad that, for one, that they didn't run it back. We're glad that Dwayne Wade's out of town. They're glad that they didn't keep him around, even though they had to pay him all that money. But I think I have to go for as far as my worst take of the year, and this kind of has been the sentiment I've had all season about this player, even back in 2016, 2017, just in 2017 as a whole. I said Nico Mirotic has shown us everything that he's got. And I was somebody that was on the bandwagon for the first couple of seasons that Nico Mirotic was here. But after what I saw, the inconsistencies from him, I became a complete and utter Nico hater, and I wanted nothing to do with him. I was hoping he walked in free agency. I hope somebody was stupid enough to give him a boatload of money between 16 and 20 million that he was asking for, but it ended up being the Bulls were the dumb enough team to give him that 12, what is he making, 12, 13 million this year, and then the team option next year. They were dumb enough to do that. I was super angry. I said, this is nothing more than just clogging up all the players that you're trying to develop. And partly that's right, but I was complete and flat out wrong about what Nico Mirotic could bring and what he is in terms of a player. Now, this is a small sample size from him returning. We know what he does in the first month of every season that he plays. He plays really well. So we'll see if the consistent goes. But I have to say that, you know, me being as bad and bagging Nico Mirotic as much as I did in 2017 probably wasn't worth all of the bagging that I did, but we'll see. Hopefully the Bulls can get some value for him, but if we're talking about worst take, I was complete and flat out wrong about what Nico Mirotic was going to be this season and possibly what his career is going to end up being in the NBA, whether that's continuing on with the Bulls or ending up on another team. So okay, if I had to pick one, it would be Nico.
Okay, two things, Jordan. First, given the loud and frequent expression of hate from your co-host, yours truly, I don't think you can quantify yourself as a Nico hater. I think just calling yourself not a Nico lover or not a Nico supporter is more accurate, because if anyone on this podcast has been ruthless and brutal about the value or lack thereof of Nico Mirotic, it's me, not you. Second, I won't admit anything to being wrong about Nico Mirotic. Not yet. Not with this sample size, absolutely not. But if there is one bad take I've had about Nico this year, it's the fact that after that fight between him and Bobby, I said, I don't think they're going to ever play together again. I said, you know, I think the Bulls are going to shut down Nico for the season. Or they'll try to find a trade partner for him. Maybe they'll trade one of the two. And, you know, I don't think it was necessarily a foolish take to say I don't think they ever share the court again, because Nico was demanding a trade. Nico gave them an ultimatum that said him or me, one of us must go. And I looked at that situation and the fact that they weren't communicating, that Bobby apologized, but Nico was refusing to make any contact, was keeping his distance, not just from Bobby, but from the whole team. I thought, how the hell is this situation going to fix itself? It's not. So if there's anything I was wrong about with Nico this year, it's the fact that I didn't think he was going to play for the Bulls again. And here he is. Here we are. He and Bobby, two of the most efficient Bulls on the court right now. But I will not walk back anything I've said about Nico and his overall NBA usefulness. If he ends up netting the Bulls anything in a trade, great, grand, wonderful, no yelling on the bus. But I still will not walk back anything negative I've ever said about Nico. I'm not buying it. Not buying it.
I'm doing a slow Peter Griffin walk away where he like breaks something in the kitchen and Lois is screaming at him and he does like the slow, real slow, steady back away from what I said about Nico. Now, I could be completely right about what I said that you know, he had eclipsed what we thought he was. He was an inconsistent player. He was, for the most part, something that we all thought he was going to be, like this great piece for the Bulls, and he hasn't turned out to be that. And I'm okay with walking it back a little bit, and now we might be right. I'm sitting in the boat still with you that among those worst takes, I think we were both in agreement that I didn't think that there was any possibility that him and Bobby Portis were going to play together on the court. And then the sheer fact that they both are playing well, I said, you have to be out of your mind to think that both of these guys are going to come back and play well together, and the locker room was going to go and shift sort of and play winning basketball and go on this winning streak. Like, none of this I had in mind. I still feel like, even though today is the day that Black Mirror released their new season of episodes, I feel like this is their, I'm going to flip on the Xbox or something, flip on Netflix to go watch Black Mirror, and there's going to be an episode about the Chicago Bulls, and it's going to be Nico Mirotic and Bobby Portis in this fight, and we're all living out this scary Twilight Zone Black Mirror episode that is going on right now. But I'm with you on that worst take too. I didn't think that it would be possible for Mirotic and for Bobby Portis to play together and play this well that they have, but it's honestly, it's a little bit of a relief. I'm glad that both guys are playing well and gives the Bulls a couple more options in terms of where they want to trade, what they want to do, and their flexibility going into the trade deadline.
Absolutely. Well, good riddance 2017, right?
Right. As we wrap up the show, I want to give you guys, we want to give you guys a little bit of a background of where we came from in 2017. So if you've been a loyalist of the Debatables or Matt and I as a whole, we started in 2017, right in the mid-dead part of the season in 2017 as a podcast. We had no idea where we were going to go with this show. We started as a three day a week, sort of a 45 minute to an hour show. Three times a week, we were producing episodes, and it took us a while, I feel like, to get our chemistry, our flow of our show, where we wanted to take this show in the type of direction that we wanted to go towards. And I feel like something that we do completely different, and for the majority of Locked On shows, if you're a Locked On fan and you listen to other shows on the network, whether it's in the MLB, the NBA, the NFL, if you like other shows there, you'll notice that Matt and I run this show completely different. And we, one of the things when we changed over to Locked On Bulls from the Debatables is we wanted to keep the core essence of our show alive, that we didn't want to change it. And we didn't want to change the flow of this show. And I think it's taken time, and we feel like our listeners and the listeners that we have added since we've come to Locked On Bulls, I feel like they've gravitated towards the way we conduct our show. And it's more about being upfront in what we do here and the way that we run the show. And the first and most important thing is us to have fun and give you guys something entertaining to listen to. You know, we're not a podcast that sits here and spews out statistical analytics and quotes from, while we do bring in quotes from players, but we're not a podcast that's going to sit there and bore you to death. And it's like watching paint dry. And that was one of the most important things, I think, about this show that we wanted to conduct for fans, people to keep wanting to come back, and especially transitioning to a show that's going 5 days a week now. So that was always, I feel like, one of our most important aspects to the show and keeping it alive, was having fun and being entertaining, but while also giving you the best and most up-to-date news for the Chicago Bulls. And I feel like that's something that we really want to kickstart and turn into something bigger in 2018.
Absolutely. And just to sort of piggyback off of those thoughts, Jordan, I wanted to thank a former colleague of mine, Matt Shook, who's actually the host of the Locked On Pistons program. For those of you NBA Central Division fans and followers, check out Locked On Pistons. He's the one who tipped me off to the fact that there was, you know, an opportunity coming forth for Locked On Bulls, looking for new hosts. And you know, Jordan and I jumped on it. And David Locke, the radio voice of the Jazz, who's been a guest on our show a couple of weeks ago, who's the head of the Locked On Network, was so helpful and welcoming to Jordan and I as we sort of made this transition. And to all of you listeners out there, thanks for giving new hosts a chance. I know that we do things a little bit differently than Sean and Cody, who had a great show of their own. You know, we were humbled and excited to take over for them. And like Jordan said, you know, we have a different style to the way we talk Bulls, and it's definitely presented not from a an unbiased standpoint. I mean, we are fans. We, you know, we cover the team, but we also are fans of the team. And, you know, we care. We let our emotions get the best of us sometimes. But I think as fans, that's kind of what you want to hear. You don't want to hear, you know, dry X's and O's analysis. Sometimes if Jordan and I see trends for certain young players that the Bulls are developing right now, we'll spend some time breaking down, you know, shot charts, you know, game flow, X's and O's. You know, we'll do that sometimes, but we don't want to do that five times a week, because I don't think that Bulls fans want to listen to that five times a week. So that being said, if you're listening to us and you listen to a couple episodes a week, maybe you're a loyal listener, or maybe you're you know, looking around to see, you know, what else is out there in the world of basketball podcasts and Bulls podcasts, if you're unconvinced, let us know. Give us feedback. And we'll continue to change and adapt this show in ways that we think will make our listeners want to keep coming back and listening. So, you know, we have some of our recurring segments, the mailbag, look back in Bulls history, the Tankathon updates, the Bulls best and worst of the week. If you have other ideas for segments you'd like to see us do, send them to us. You know, hit us up on Twitter, email us at lockdownbulls@gmail.com. Any and all feedback, we welcome it, we appreciate it, and we look forward to it.
Yeah, I just want to touch one more thing is, so many sports podcasts out there are trying to spit out a bunch of analytical facts at you with little to no structure or little to no character behind that. And That's why you see there's been an overload of podcasts, an overload of shows, an overload of NBA analysis across all social media and everything that you get. And I think one of the most important parts of this show and what makes local broadcasts or what makes local podcasts what they are is the character, the personality, and the life that you give to the show. And I think that's why it's so important for people who love the Bulls that don't like national perspectives to be able to come back and get their local perspective from people who grew up in Chicago, from people who've been following the Bulls since they could walk. Like there are so many aspects to local coverage that we want to give fans, but we also want to be here to entertain you too. You don't listen to us to get bored to death or something that is equivalent to a podcast that you would turn off in 10 minutes. Like we try to keep it fun. We try to keep it light. We try to keep it entertaining. And that's been one of the most core parts of this podcast as we transitioned over. And hey, like Matt had said, we're still learning how to do this. We're still learning how to run shows 5 days a week rather than 3 days a week, a show that's 30 minutes rather than 60 minutes a day. One other thing I want to give a shout out to is the people at Dash Radio. Dash Radio has been awesome for us this year, and they've given us an opportunity, a platform to go worldwide, basically, on a platform that allows us to share our views, our Bulls takes on other channels with pretty prominent names in radio, pretty prominent DJs, and they've been more than willing to work with us. And so we're big fans of Dash Radio, and we're excited for the things that are coming for Dash Radio. So if you've heard us mention it at the beginning and ends of shows, but you don't really know what Dash Radio is about, I highly suggest you go download the Dash Radio app and listen to us on the Nothing But Net channel. And I promise you, you're going to find other NBA shows on there too that you're going to like that have the sort of personality, the spin that we do here on the Locked On Bulls. But we wanted to give a shout out to everybody at Dash Radio and giving us the opportunity there. And we're looking forward to not only making this podcast even bigger and better in 2018, but also the feedback coming from you guys. If there wasn't the listeners and the fan base that we had already had, and the sort of the fan base that Cody and Sean had built up before, a lot of those listeners have stayed, and we really appreciate it. And everybody that was with us on the Debatables has kind of transitioned over to Locked On Bulls. And we know that you can't catch every episode, but we hope that you're still going to stick around with us. And we're excited for the way that this thing is going, and we're excited for the way that the show is going in general. So we appreciate everybody for listening to us in 2017, and we hope you stick with us. And like Matt had said, please give us feedback. Anything you wanted to hear that we're doing on the show, things that we're doing well on the show, things that maybe you don't like that you'd like to see cut out of the show. Your feedback is the most important, because we're here to give you the content and the entertainment that you want to hear from a podcast overall. So we hope we can do that bigger and better for you in 2018.
Absolutely. And happy new year to all of our Bulls Nation listeners.
Yeah, so that's gonna about do it here on Locked On Bulls for 2017, for the Debatables, for Locked On Bulls, for 2017, for Matt and Jordan. We have had a ton of fun this year being able to bring you Chicago Bulls content. Remember, you can follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Locked On Bulls, and at Bulls_Peck. Find all of our content at LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports. We're on Dash Radio, DashRadio.com, and the Dash Radio app on the Nothing But Net channel, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. Follow us on there. Download the app. It's a wonderful app, DashRadio.com, too, if you want to find it in your browser. That's it for 2017. That's it for Bulls coverage in 2017. We'll be back in the brand new year next week for fresh episodes, and we'll dive into plenty of more Bulls coverage. But for Jordan and Matt, have a wonderful and safe New Year's Eve. Have a great New Year's Day, and we hope to see you back in 2018.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com, part of FanRag Sports.